Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, November 12th. Elections Chief, MISD investigation will cover all districts. Those wanting to learn more about the Midland County Elections Office investigation into questions about the precinct assignments started to get answers on Tuesday. Board President Rick Davis, looking very much like an attorney in a deposition, asked Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves about the past, present, and future of her investigation into what happened during the November 3rd elections in District 1 and across the community. Based on his questions and her answers, those at the special board meeting and others watching online learned this was an issue with boundaries not updated after the 2010 census and 2011 redistricting efforts. There were at least 441 registered voters in District 1 and 2 impacted, although it wasn't known how many of those voted in the November 3rd election. Investigation still needed to take place in other districts across the city to see if those boundaries were updated. The investigation into District 4 started Tuesday. The problems with voters questioning their precinct assignment actually started during the early voting period. Graves' initial comments that indicated 31 people were impacted reflected those voters election office personnel knew at the time were impacted, not others they were investigating. The questioning of Graves again confirmed that the runoffs for Districts 1 and 4 could take place December 15th, and there would be 2 weeks of early voting. Graves told Davis she expected all boundary issues would be fixed and voters wouldn't have problems participating whether they were voting in person or mailing in their ballots. Quote, "It is just human error," Graves said. "I can't tell you why it happened. The only thing I can tell you is that it will be fixed," end quote. The meeting involved at least a couple of candidates who went through close elections in the past decade. Canvassed results from 2016 showed John Kennedy won his District 4 seat by one vote over Rachel Stone, 1,534 to 1,533. Also, District 2 Representative Robert Marquez mentioned his 2012 loss by 8 votes. The county's website showed it was 10. He made mention of those voters who were in the wrong district 8 years ago and asked Graves how the community will know the precinct information will be correct moving forward. Quote, "How does accountability happen going forward?" Marquez asked. "Where's the accountability check?" End quote. Graves and County Attorney Russell Malm said they will deal with the upcoming election, continue their investigation, and then put more practices in place to avoid problems in the future. Graves has been in her position less than a year after former embattled Elections Administrator Deborah Land resigned and took a different position inside the county following the bond election saga in November 2019 that ended with an elections office employee finding a lost ballot box. The school board on Tuesday also heard from an official with the Texas Secretary of State's office who told the board that canvassing the vote is not a certification of the results, but a ministerial duty to accept results. The board wanted to hear from the Secretary of State's office, especially after the controversy that followed canvassing the results from the 2019 bond election. The ensuing vote to canvass the election resulted in 5 votes to canvass and 1 against Kennedy. John Trusetti III missed Tuesday's meeting because of a business obligation. Kennedy said he felt uncomfortable voting to canvass the election, even if it was not to certify the results. Board members also voted to approve the recount in Districts 1 and 4. Local GOP leaders aren't acknowledging presidential election outcome. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Apart from former Midlander George W. Bush, who referred to Joe Biden as president-elect while congratulating him in a statement Sunday, local GOP leaders are mostly staying mum about the results of the U.S. presidential election. Congressman Mike Conaway of Midland has not commented on the election, while August Pfluger, who will replace Conaway as District 11's representative in January, has called for transparency in the election process. Quote, "Every legal vote must be counted, results certified in a transparent way, and the president has the right to contest and recount votes," Pfluger posted on Twitter. The Trump campaign has indicated it will request recounts in Wisconsin and Georgia and has filed lawsuits in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Nevada alleging voter fraud. So far, the campaign hasn't produced evidence of fraud, and most of those lawsuits have been dismissed. Emboldened by the president's claims, Trump supporters have been gathering to protest in the swing states that gave Biden an edge, chanting, "Count the votes," and "Stop the steal." State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa has not commented publicly on the election. The Midland County Republican Party and Midland County Republican Women also have not commented on the outcome or released statements. Some state GOP leaders, however, have been braver in backing Trump's unsubstantiated claims of election interference by Democrats. Governor Greg Abbott has posted on Twitter that, quote, "Election fraud is real, and what is happening in some states undermines trust in elections," end quote. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz has made numerous appearances on Fox News in the last few days, in which he's furthered Trump's claims by saying, quote, "Illegally cast votes shouldn't be counted," and ridiculed the mainstream media for what he's described as prematurely calling the election for Biden. Cruz has also shared the link to an election defense fund for a U.S. House Republican candidate in Pennsylvania who is raising funds to challenge the election results in his race after the Democratic incumbent was named the winner. Chairman of the Texas Republican Party, Alan West, released a statement Saturday morning casting doubt on the legitimacy of the presidential election results. Quote, "The news has been announced that the Democrat Socialists have found and counted enough votes to declare Joe Biden the 46th president," he said in a statement. Continuing the quote, "Biden and Harris will be similar to Barry Bonds and have a permanent asterisk by their names. Americans don't like cheaters," end quote. Connection made. Ann Dixon experiences breakthrough moment at meeting with teachers. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. A connection was made Tuesday afternoon at Bowie Fine Arts Academy that was weeks in the making for interim superintendent Ann Dixon. Dixon said Monday night that people were talking about everything but academic improvement. Then, while talking to a small group of teachers on Tuesday, she heard concerns about the decline in reading skills. Quote, "I would come kiss you if not for the mask and social distancing," Dixon said, pointing at her mask. But Tuesday wasn't just about a meeting with teachers who wanted to provide input about what they wanted in the next permanent superintendent. As far as the number of people who participated, the meeting was not a success. Like the community meeting a day earlier at Lee High School, it probably raised questions about how much people cared. At Bowie, there were 6 teachers or staff members, 3 MISD school board members, an auditorium operations worker, and Dixon. Their positions ranged from an anatomy instructor to a department chair and associate principal. Their concerns started with having someone familiar with West Texas, the most common so far in the public gatherings. They wanted someone who could relate to West Texas and who Midlanders could relate to, likely a reaction to the feeling that Midland might have been a stepping stone for a younger superintendent on their way up the superintendent ladder, or an older superintendent looking for that job before retirement. Along with the ability to relate, teachers want a superintendent who could communicate. they wanted a superintendent who would lend an ear when possible, or a leader with an open-door policy. They wanted a man or woman who would be visible on campuses and personify the supportive role that they expect central office is supposed to be. The other calls were for a person who is innovative, could be clear about academic goals, and understand that not all campuses were Carver Center, one of the highest performing elementary campuses in the state, according to Children at Risk, and home of Midland ISD's Talented and Gifted program at the elementary school level. But listening to the back and forth, Dixon told those who made the effort to talk superintendent search issues that the meeting allowed her to better understand the situation at Midland ISD's secondary campuses. She said she spent time at Lee High School earlier in the day and learned about the issues the school staff was having with academic pacing, the availability of substitutes, and technology issues. But she didn't back off the intention of bringing secondary students back to campus 5 days a week. Quote, "I support the teachers also, but the students' education is the priority," she said after Tuesday night's special meeting of the MISD board. It went back to that conversation with the teacher, the first one to bring up academic improvement. "I would be scared," she told him. "There are students from 19 D and F-rated campuses coming your way," she said. To weigh in on what Midland ISD leaders should look for when it comes to the next superintendent, go to misd.edu and fill out a survey. Railroad Commissioner-elect has focus on education transparency. The story was written by Miller McEwen. There will be no shortage of issues for Jim Wright as he takes his seat on the Railroad Commission in January, alongside Chair Christy Craddock and Wayne Christian. In Midland Monday, to address the Permian Basin Association of Pipeliners, Wright looked ahead to his term on the commission. Asked what he sees as the top priority as he takes office, he said there is, quote, "a combination of things," end quote. He went on to list the need for educating the public, not just on what the Railroad Commission does, but also the impact of the oil and gas industry on the Texas economy and everyday lives. Secondly, he said he wants to form a task force that involves industry representatives as well as those from various industries, communities, and interest groups. Quote, "I want them to sit down and ensure we create regulations that foster an environment that sustains the energy market, the economic impact, and jobs created," Wright said. "I want everyone to have a voice at the table. I want transparency," end quote. He said what spurred him to enter the race for Railroad Commission was his experience with an earlier task force that was not warmly received by Railroad Commission staff. Not only does Wright and other newly elected and re-elected officials take office in January, but the Texas legislature begins its five-month session. Wright said he and his fellow commissioners will be visiting with legislators to make sure the agency keeps its funding and, quote, "ensure we bring back the tax base that provides so much for Texas," end quote. Wright said that during his campaign, he was told by a number of industry representatives they would be happy to pay for information technology upgrades at the commission so they can access the data they need for their work. The commission should listen to those offers, he said. It ties back to the education process of what fossil fuels contribute, he said. He also expects the commission will continue to address the issue of flaring. Quote, "The answer to flaring is at the other end of the pipe," he said of the need to build a larger market for natural gas. To unilaterally ban flaring by denying permits would reverse the progress the country has made toward energy independence and security and reduce its standing as a global leader of energy resources, he said. Quote, "Flaring is a complicated issue and needs to be addressed in a way that will continue economic development and create jobs, and would invite competitors to Texas producers into the state," Wright said. Eliminating fossil fuels would not only eliminate the economic benefits, but things like clothing, computers, and telephones that come from petroleum products, he said. Wright said he is looking forward to working with his new colleagues. He called Craddock a masterful politician skilled at building bridges between the agency and legislators. And Christian, he said, is a financial genius who can help bring investor interest back to the oil and gas industry. He himself is an industry veteran who knows the rules and how the industry works. He said the three of them should make a formidable commission.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 12th, 2020, continuing with Section A. City reports Midland man being held on $1 million bond in shooting death. Second suspect being sought in incident. A 42-year-old Midland man was being held Wednesday at Midland County Jail on a murder charge in connection with a shooting death that occurred Monday night, according to a press release from the city's spokeswoman. Bond for John T. Sepulveda has been set at $1 million. Brad Beck, 38, also a suspect in the death of Justin Zadovich, 68, is being sought on a murder charge, according to the release. Midland police were dispatched to the 500 block of South Mineola Street at about 6 p.m. Monday in reference to a dead man on the back porch of a residence. During the investigation, it was discovered that gunshots were heard near the residence at about 12:30 a.m. Monday. The victim, later identified as Zadovich, sustained multiple gunshot wounds. On Tuesday, police identified the suspects as Sepulveda and Beck, according to the release. Sepulveda refused to give a statement to police. He then was transported to Midland County Detention Center and charged in Zadovich's death. An arrest warrant on a murder charge has been obtained for Beck. The investigation is continuing. MISD's number of COVID cases jumps to 117 in November, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD is reporting the most COVID-19 cases in 1 week and 117 cases through the first 8 days in November. The district showed that there were 110 cases during the week of November 2nd, which was 35 more than the previous high weekly mark, 75 on October 19th. The 110 cases from last week were an 80% increase from the previous week. Midland ISD Chief of Staff Katie Atkins said Tuesday during a press conference that the district continues to deliver on its mission of education. She said the district is responding to calls from people in the community to return students to campuses from pre-K through 12th grade. Midland ISD still has an online academy available for families that don't want to participate in on-campus learning. We've heard overwhelmingly from the community, especially during the spring, regarding online learning, that students were falling behind, Atkins said. We're learning from across a number of entities that they want their students back in school for face-to-face instruction. The only way that we can make sure that that is done effectively and safely is through mitigation. Lee High School and Midland High School were tied for the most COVID cases, students and staff, with 16 each during the first 8 days of the month. Midland Freshman High School was third in line with 9. Lee Freshman, San Jacinto Junior High, and Abel Junior High were tied with 7 each. The most of any elementary school was 6 at Yarbrough Elementary. Midland ISD also reports that the total number of confirmed cases since July is up to 447. Freshwater District passes resolution opposing saltwater disposal near city's water source, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland County Freshwater Supply District Monday passed a resolution calling for more studies on the potential side effects of saltwater disposal near the city's water supply before the city council moves forward on a contract that would allow commercial disposal at T-Bar Ranch. City Council members October 6th unanimously approved a resolution to begin negotiating a contract with Felix Water for commercial saltwater disposal at Winkler County's T-Bar Ranch, the source of Midland's water via a 67-mile pipeline. The council was set to move forward on that contract Monday, but instead opted to defer any further negotiations until a later meeting. The Freshwater District passed a resolution opposing the project before the city council meeting. A copy of the resolution states the district opposes approving a contract without further hydrological studies being conducted to determine the potential impact on the fresh potable water at T-Bar Ranch. They're also requesting the council delay the project until the Freshwater District can evaluate how the proposal might impact operations at T-Bar Ranch. Jose Cuevas, chairman of the Freshwater District, previously told the Reporter-Telegram he would under no circumstances support a commercial disposal site at T-Bar Ranch, calling it too much of a gamble to play with Midland's water source. Cuevas said he's most concerned that the city's plans would allow for saltwater disposal to be done commercially. While oil and gas companies that are drilling at the site are already permitted to inject their saltwater waste, a commercial designation would allow a company to transport and dispose of waste from other companies, he said. The implementation of saltwater disposal wells brings the possibility of contamination from hydrogen sulfide and other irritants, Cuevas said. The resolution from the Freshwater District is largely symbolic because the district does not have a say in the project. Its only input is in the facility and pipeline that provides the city's water, Cuevas said previously.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 12, 2020. Story time with a guest. U.S. Representative Mike Conaway reads, I know an old lady who swallowed a pie Tuesday to students in the pre-K academy at Midland College. Each student received a copy of the book by Allison Jackson. Mayor Patrick Payton, MC Police Chief Richard McKee, and Reporter-Telegram editor Stuart Doreen are lined up to read to the kids. Senior Life has fundraisers. T Senior Life Midland is partnering with McAllister's Deli for Warm Up the Community. McAllister's will donate to Meals on Wheels 10 cents for every cup or bowl of soup purchased in November. For more information, call 689-6693. Senior Life is seeking donated items for the Warming Tree, gifts for Midland's homebound seniors. Gifts can include blankets, socks, slippers, gift cards, and hygiene products. Items may be dropped off at 3301 Sinclair Avenue through December 11. For more information, call 689-6693 or email Kathleen Kerwayne Haney, KKHAYNIE at seniorlifemidland.org, or Tracy Renton, TRENTON at seniorlifemidland.org. Student could win $10,000 UTPB scholarship. Students who attend Falcon Day, either in person at the University of Texas Permian Basin or online, could win a $10,000 scholarship, according to a press release. Falcon Day gives prospective students the opportunity to learn about UTPB. The next Falcon Day is Saturday. Another event is scheduled for February 27. The winner of the scholarship will be selected by drawing in February. The Saturday event will have a hybrid format. Falcon Day will start at 11 a.m. with a live virtual event. President Sandra Woodley, current students, staff, and faculty will talk about what UTPB has to offer. Students can ask questions throughout the presentation or during a Q&A session. After the virtual part of Falcon Day, participants can visit campus for self-guided tours. Staff members will be available to answer questions. To register for Falcon Day, visit utpb.edu. Laura W. Bush Institute to host free webinar. The Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center will host Feed Your Mind, Nourish Your Inner Self, noon to 1 p.m. today on Zoom. The event will feature a presentation from Dr. Sarah Mallard Wakefield, Chair of the TTUHSC Department of Psychiatry, and Stephanie Moses, Ph.D., TTUHSC Associate Professor of Psychology. With the election season, COVID-19, and the upcoming holiday season, we know this is a very stressful time for so many people in our communities, said Angela Knapp Eggers, the Institute's Senior Director. We hope this webinar will provide some strategies to help adults and children navigate this unprecedented time with purpose and sanity. To register for the free webinar, visit www.laurabushinstitute.org/events. Synergy offers tickets for food. Synergy Cinemas and Entertainment is offering one free movie ticket with a donation of 2 canned food items for a local food pantry. Patrons can get the free tickets through Sunday, according to a press release from Synergy. Texas Recycles Day is Saturday. Annual Texas Recycles Day is 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at Chaparral Center parking lot. Items that can be brought for recycling are electronics, appliances, and tires. In addition, up to 3 boxes of paper can be brought for free shredding. For more information, call Keep Midland Beautiful at 688-7745 or visit keepmidlandbeautiful.org. ENAM receives re-accreditation. The Alan Well Art Museum has again achieved accreditation by the American Alliance of Museums, the highest national recognition afforded the nation's museums, according to a press release. Accreditation signifies excellence to the museum community, to governments, funders, outside agencies, and to the museum-going public. ENAM achieved initial accreditation in 2005. All museums must undergo a reaccreditation review at least every 10 years to maintain accredited status, according to the release. Of the nation's estimated 33,000 museums, only 1,070 have achieved accreditation. ENAM is one of only 49 museums accredited in Texas.
Obituaries for Thursday, November 12th. Basilisa Sanchez. Basilisa Sanchez, 79, of Midland, passed away November 10th. Visitation will be held Thursday, November 12th from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. at Iglesia Apostolica, 2309 South Fort Worth. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, November 13th at Iglesia Apostolica. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Survivors include her husband, Aiden Sanchez, sons Angel Sanchez, Jose Luis Sanchez, Leonel Sanchez, a daughter, Elizabeth Sanchez, brothers, Humberto Lujan, Luis Lujan, sisters, Emelinda Lujan, Maria Lujan, and several grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Hilda Rivera Gallegos. Hilda Rivera Gallegos passed away at 61 years of age, October 28th. She was born in Corpus Christi, October 16th, 1959, to Manuel and Juanita Rivera. She married John Gallegos in 1980. She is survived by her husband, John Gallegos, daughter, Patricia Morin, and husband, Ramon Jr., 4 brothers, Ralph Rivera, Victor Rivera, and wife, Carmen, Cesar Rivera of Houston, and Gilbert Rivera and wife, Debbie of Corpus Christi, a sister, Norma Castillo, and husband, Martin of Houston, nieces and nephews, and 2 grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her father, Manuel Rivera, 3 brothers, Johnny Rivera, Alfredo Garcia and Fernando Rivera, and a sister, Esther Rivera. A memorial service will be held online Saturday, November 14th at 3 p.m. Kevin D. Taylor. Kevin D. Taylor, 55, of Midland, was born December 15th, 1964, and passed away Monday, November 9th. He is survived by his wife, Nelfa, children Carl, Caitlin, and Carson Taylor, parents Mary and Harold Taylor, siblings Tony and wife Connie, and Pam and husband Jonathan Bricky, along with many other family members. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, November 12th at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. A funeral service will be held at 12 noon Friday, November 13th at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lacey Ellen James. Lacey Ellen James, 80, of Midland, passed away November 10th. Memorial services will be Friday, November 13th at 11 a.m. at Crestview Baptist Church. Graveside services will be in Sanderson, Monday, November 16th at 1 p.m. Lacey was born December 30th, 1939, in Odessa to Eliza Lee and Veda Ellen Eggleston of Big Spring. She is survived by her daughters, Joanna Thomason and Lon, and Lori Cravey and husband Doug. She is also survived by her brothers, Philip Eggleston and wife Martha, George Eggleston and wife Ethel, and sister Nancy Frizzell and husband Dean, sister-in-law Joan Eggleston, three grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by Louis James, her husband of 52 years, her brother, Carol Eggleston, and a son-in-law, Keith Thomason. Memorials may be made to Crestview Baptist Church Building Fund, 301 North Loop 250 West, Midland 79703, or to the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Terry David McAnally. Terry David McAnally, 73, passed away October 25th at his home in Athens. He was born June 28, 1947, to Claude and Billy Winslet McAnally in Pecos. He was preceded in death by his parents, daughters Teresa McAnally and Angel Pierce, and a sister, Toby Ward. He married Vivian Vicky McAnally in 2009 in Las Vegas. Survivors include his wife, Vivian, sons Benny Lynn Stone Jr. and wife Patricia Leanne, Timothy Paul Stone and wife Christy, and Brandon D. McMaurice. 13 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren, brothers Mike McAnally and wife Jeanette, and Doug McAnally and wife Diana. Memorial services will be held at Athens Church of God in Athens at 1 p.m. November 12th. A memorial service will also be held November 14th at First Baptist Church of Tarzan at 3 p.m. Isaiah Soto. Isaiah Soto, 8 years old, passed away Sunday, November 8th in Lubbock, surrounded by his family. Funeral services were held Thursday, November 12th at Mid-Cities Community Church, 191 campus in Midland. Burial followed at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Isaiah was born August 28, 2012, to Luis and Ashley Soto in Odessa. He is survived by his parents, his grandparents, Manuel and Alma Ramirez, and Ubaldo and Benigno Soto, and numerous loving aunts, uncles, and cousins. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Billy Turner. Billy Turner, 82, of Midland, passed away November 9th. No services are planned with Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Survivors include Todd and Vicki Turner. Fred Lewis Jr. Fred Lewis Jr., 68, of Midland, passed away November 6th. Visitation will be held Friday, November 13th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Family will receive friends from 7 to 9 p.m. Cremation services have been chosen. He is survived by his son, Calvin Gary of Shorter, Alabama, and daughter, Rosalyn Nikki Scott of Commerce. Glenn Roger Sanders. Glenn Roger Sanders, 78, of Midland, passed away Friday, November 6th. Viewing will take place from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, November 12th at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Masks will be required at the funeral home. A funeral service will be Friday, November 13th at 1 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by three sons, Bobby Sanders, Roy Sanders, Roger Sanders, and a daughter, Sherry Vines, several grandchildren, and several great-grandchildren. Jesse Yarte Valles, Jr. Jesse Valles, Jr., 72, of Midland, passed away Sunday, November 8th. He was born August 1st, 1948, in Midland, to the late Antonio Yarte and Jesus Valles. Graveside services will be held Friday, November 13th at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. John Wilms. John Peter Wilms, 90, of Midland, passed away July 7th. He is survived by his son James Wilms of Magnolia and daughter Joan Wilms of Midland. A private graveside service has been scheduled for Friday, November 13th at Rest Haven Memorial Cemetery. Arrangements under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Joshua Sean Burnett. Joshua Sean Burnett, 46, of Odessa, passed away Saturday, November 7th. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, November 13th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. He is survived by his parents, W. Howard and Martha Burnett. Manuela Baeza de Caballero. Manuela Baeza de Caballero, 79, of Odessa, passed away November 9th in Odessa. She was born April 21st, 1941, to Juan and Paula Dominguez Baeza in Rancho El Ojito, Manuel Benavides, Chihuahua, Mexico. She married Maurilio Caballero in 1961 in Mexico. She is survived by her spouse, Maurilio Caballero of Mexico, 5 children, 19 grandchildren, and 23 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held Thursday, November 12th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Rosary will be at 6 p.m. Thursday, November 12th. Funeral services are Friday, November 13th at 1 p.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery.
Hello. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, November 12th, 2020. Front page. Tough talk on COVID at council. Health leaders criticize lack of action from council. By Federico Martinez. FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. Ector County health leaders on Wednesday blasted Odessa City Council's decision this week to launch a series of public service announcements rather than take stricter measures to address rapidly increasing COVID-19 cases in Odessa. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan criticized City Council for not, quote, taking responsibility for protecting residents. Saravanan made his comments during a Wednesday meeting between Ector County school officials and health officials. His comments were echoed by Medical Center Hospital CEO Russell Tippin. Odessa City Council will be implementing some things, I believe, but they will be optional, Saravanan said. It should be mandatory, not optional, if we're going to save lives. I know it's difficult to make these decisions, but there's a social responsibility that leaders have to protect citizens. Saravanan and Tippin's criticism came one day after Odessa City Council spent nearly 1 hour threatening to, quote, get tough and clamp down on residents who are not wearing masks or following social distancing guidelines, Efforts council members say are needed to combat the quickly increasing number of COVID-19 cases in Ector County. But after the tough talk was over, the council instead directed city staff to launch a series of public service announcements. Quote, "I don't think we have enough police or manpower to enforce anything," Councilwoman Peggy Dean said during Tuesday's council meeting. "We need to scare the bejesus out of them instead with a message. We need to warn people harshly and put it back in their face. It's like giving children a two-week notice." Mayor David Turner and the majority of council agreed that if COVID numbers continue to rise, the city will need to take more drastic measures. Quote, "When push comes to shove, in the next week, if things continue to get worse, we may have to do something or the state will come in and do it for us," Turner said. Turner warned the council that local COVID cases in Odessa are increasing at an alarming rate. "Last week, local hospitals reported a total of 823 new cases," Turner said. "An additional 400 cases were reported on Monday and Tuesday. Local hospitals are running out of bed spaces for patients," according to Turner, who said he speaks with hospital officials every morning. Odessa Regional Medical Center and Medical Center Hospital reported Tuesday that they are housing some COVID patients in emergency rooms because there's no place else to put them. "Both hospitals are currently trying to operate without dozens of employees who are off sick," Turner said. "The biggest problem we have is simply people are not following the rules," Councilwoman Mary Willis, who has previously expressed support for passing an ordinance that would require residents to wear masks, said council needs to take a stand. "I believe as leaders we have to make difficult decisions," Willis said. "In my opinion, it's not about politics, trying to instill fear in anyone or infringing on people's rights. It's about doing what's right for the community. I know we're all tired, but being tired isn't going to put COVID on its way." Councilman Tom Sprawl said he supported the public service announcements, but remains opposed to any effort that would try to force residents to wear masks or practice social distancing. "A mask mandate is just not effective or enforceable," Sprawl said. Devin Sanchez, the city's director of communications, said that the city's public relations efforts initially did focus on encouraging the public to wear masks and adhere to social distancing recommendations. In recent months, the focus has been on testing. "We've been trying to steer away from making it sound political," Sanchez said, "but council's message tonight is that we need to be more aggressive about this." Honoring the Fallen, Memorial Unveiled to Wilson and Young by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. Alfred Mack Wilson and Marvin Rex Young may be gone, but they certainly have not been forgotten. An example of that was on display when a memorial in their honor was unveiled just outside of the entrance of the Wilson and Young Medal of Honor VA clinic located on Highway 191. Wilson and Young were both posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. Wilson and Young were both posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor in April 1970 for their actions during the Vietnam War. Wilson, who graduated from Odessa High School in the class of 1967, was a corporal in the United States Marine Corps, serving in the 9th Marines, 3rd Marine Division in the Vietnam War. While returning from a reconnaissance mission during Operation Dewey Canyon, Wilson's platoon was ambushed. Wilson threw himself on an enemy hand grenade that was thrown between himself and a fellow Marine, sacrificing his life to save another on March 3, 1969. Young, who graduated from Permian in the class of 1965, was a staff sergeant in the United States Army. He was in the 5th Infantry, 25th Infantry Division during the war. Young's platoon came under intense fire from the North Vietnamese Army, killing the platoon leader while on a reconnaissance mission on August 21, 1968. Young assumed command of the platoon and directed his men into defensive positions to counter the attacking forces. He provided cover fire after ordering his men to withdraw and was eventually engulfed by the enemy, but helped save the lives of many soldiers. Congressman Mike Conaway, R. Midland, spoke at the ceremony, as well as Commander Chapter 0900 Military Order of the Purple Heart, Steve Oyen, as well as West Texas VA Healthcare System Director, Jason Cave. I'm proud of how this community has been able to honor both of these individuals, Conaway said. These two men will never be forgotten or their sacrifices. The clinic was recently renamed in both men's honor, and the process of putting together a memorial was a long and tedious course. Quote, about 4.5 years ago, a group of people got together in Lubbock to put together a monument that would honor our region's Medal of Honor recipients, Gold Star and Purple Heart recipients, Oyen said. We came down here and we did a phase two of the Friends of the Monument and put together a couple of fundraisers down here for this, for renaming the clinic and putting the sign on the other side of the MCH building. We had a fundraiser, and finally, we're at this point where this memorial for these two heroes will be here forever. Oyen said it meant a lot to see the memorial finally placed outside the hospital. I think the congressman, Conaway, said it all. If we don't honor those who have come before us, who have fallen and sacrificed, no one coming behind will, Oyen said. It's a great way to honor, remember, and keep their names alive. They gave their lives for us, so this is the least we can do. Billy Brown, who also served in Vietnam and was among those who helped spearhead the campaign, was also happy to see Wilson and Young honored for their sacrifice. This means a lot, Brown said. This is a legacy for future generations. Superintendent offers condolences. OA News at OAOA.com. Following the death of an Ector County ISD third grader last weekend, Superintendent Scott Murray expressed condolences to the family. Murray offered his deepest sympathies during an ECISD Board of Trustees workshop Tuesday night, the board recap said. He added that the district is charged with the safety of our students and the employees of ECISD, the recap said. He said he feels the district does a really good job of keeping people safe and told trustees he is proud of the work of teachers and administrators who are going far and above their call of duty to keep each other safe, the recap said. Murray reminded board members he meets with local health and medical officials each week, and they feel schools are some of the safest places to be right now because of the many precautions being required every day. The recap said data is showing that small group gatherings are currently the leading cause of the spread in the community. He added that the masks required for students and masks and face shields required for employees across the district are a couple of the steps that help them protect everyone. In a similar vein, but on a separate item, West Elementary School Counselor Margot Conway asked the board to consider loosening the mask requirements for students and teachers. She asked that staff members be able to choose between a mask and a shield rather than require both, and cited research showing masks have a negative effect on a child's communication, cognitive development, and inhibits the ability to build relationships in the classroom, the recap said. In the fine arts presentation, Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley said from elementary through high school, more than 25,000, or 79% of enrolled students, are in fine arts programs. In 2019, Hawley said, students who remained in both fine arts and athletics for 4 years all graduated. Students in ECISD Fine Arts have higher SAT averages, attendance rates, and of course test scores, and graduation rates than those not in the programs. Fine arts programs also place a big focus on giving back through community involvement and participating in public events. ECISD programs have won many awards, including the prestigious National Association of Music Merchants Best Communities for Music Education for 6 straight years, and ECISD fine arts directors hold many leadership positions in region and state organizations, the recap said. Holly said fine arts changes lives, and because the community gives to fine arts and ECISD give back to the community. The Odessa High School Band received $185,000 for band uniforms from the F. Marie Hall Foundation. Groups like the OHS One Act Play have continued to advance, and Panther Paws from Permian High School performed in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade last year. Despite COVID-19, 10 art students received medals for success at the state level, Holly said. PHS Associate Director of Bands John Carroll is president-elect of the Texas Music Educators Association and will be president next year. Holly noted that he comes from a long line of leaders from this area. In line with the district's strategic plan discussed Tuesday night, Holly said the fine arts is working toward creating a strategic plan. The department wants to get art into more of the elementary schools and create a chapter of future music. Holly said everyone is required to have a high school credit in fine arts, and the department wants to provide as many opportunities for students as possible. Presentations on the energy management program and efforts on the district strategic plan were also heard by trustees. Director of Custodial Services Kyle Brown and Energy Specialist Kelly Buchanan gave reviewed energy conservation and savings efforts. Utility costs are about $6 million a year, with about $4.2 million for electricity, $1.6 million for water and sewer, and $330,000 for gas. Summer and holidays provide the greatest opportunity for savings, the presentation showed. Because of COVID, Brown said there was a decrease in costs for April, May, and June. Average annual savings is about $1,649,941, which Murray says goes back into the district. Total savings over last 8 years is $13,199,532, according to the presentation. Brown said the Energy Management Office is always looking at ways to improve. Trustees also received an update on the work of the strategic plan. These updates are presented to the board quarterly. The 3 strategic themes of the plan are foundational excellence, talent development, and learning journey. Within each theme are critical projects, and a 10-member project management oversight committee has been formed to make sure the work is being done on schedule. Research shows organizations fail to execute their strategies at rates between 60 and 90%. It is said goals are important, systems work. Establishing those effective systems to ensure the plan's goals are achieved is the job of the Project Management Oversight Committee, the recap said. One of the first-year priorities is job-embedded, personalized professional learning. It falls under the talent development theme. It is learning grounded in day-to-day teaching practices and is designed to enhance teachers' knowledge and skills and improve student outcomes. Things like observation, feedback, coaching, mentors, professional learning communities, and independent learning are means to establish an effective system of job-embedded, personalized professional learning. On a separate note, Murray let the board know that 10,000 self-administered COVID-19 tests arrived Tuesday, and school nurses are developing the plan to roll them out to employees. It will be done on a small scale at first, then made available to all campuses. Eventually, students will be included with parent permission, the recap said. previous coverage, tinyurl.com/y4vhlvpn. Meeting agenda, tinyurl.com/yxm29xf8. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Editor's note, Ector County last updated COVID-19 numbers Tuesday afternoon. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 7,804. Ector County negative, 28,963 out of 37,273 tested, with 506 pending, 125 deaths. Recovered, 6,002. Active, 1,677. ECISD daily cases, 12 students, 6 staff. Midland County, 6,213 confirmed, 103 deaths. Texas, 985,380 confirmed, with 9,007,171 tested. Total Texas deaths, 18,863. U.S. cases, 10,170,846 total confirmed, and 239,590 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6nttuq. Quick hits. Free movie tickets. Synergy Cinemas and Entertainment is offering one free movie ticket with a donation of 2 canned food items for their local food pantry. Guests can bring in 2 canned food items in exchange for 1 free movie ticket. Valid in-store only through Sunday. Visit Synergy.com. Veterans Car and Bike Show. The first annual 2322 Combat Veterans Car and Bike Show has been scheduled from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday at Hooters, 2660 JBS Parkway. Entry fee is a donation of $15 for motorcycles and $20 for cars. Trophies will be awarded for People's Choice overall, Best Car and Best Motorcycle. Certificates for 2nd through 9th as judged by the public. There will be 50-50 raffles, Hooters calendar, Hooters gift cards, basket raffles, and silent auctions. All proceeds, minus administration costs, to be donated to the Veterans Homeless Program. Visit tinyurl.com/y2vl7lqs. WTFB in need of help. The West Texas Food Bank has set up a few opportunities for the community to get involved, since this year is different due to COVID-19. WTFB is now accepting small volunteer groups and individuals through its new volunteer website, wtxfoodbank.volunteerhub.com, to help them keep organized. Local communities are also encouraged to start a virtual food drive or to just donate at wtxfoodbank.org/host-a-food-drive. In addition, partner agencies are encouraged to add their link at wtxfoodbank.org/how-to-get-help for people who are in need of help. For additional information, call 580-6333. or visit WTXFoodBank.org. Ag Inquiry Science Fair. The Texas Farm Bureau has launched the Ag Inquiry Science Fair to fifth grade students explore agriculture and better understand the science involved in farming and ranching. AISF project categories and components align with TEKS to reflect grade level standards and material learned in the classroom. Students can choose from five categories: animal science, agronomy, technology in agriculture, water systems conservation, and sustainability in agriculture for their project. As part of AISF, students will be required to submit a completed project that includes a 3 to 5 minute video presentation, a display that presents the inquiry and findings, and a journal that tracks the progress of the inquiry. Students will submit individual projects. Submissions are due by Friday. Judges will rank the project description and video to determine the projects that advance to the display round. First, second, and third place will be awarded for each category based on the scores for the display and written portions. Winners will receive an award package with a variety of items included. For more information on project details and the online application, visit https://txfb.us/AISF20. 286 days. For 286 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through September 30th, the city has spent $62,843.51 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. MCH reports 109th COVID-19-related death. Medical Center Health System reported its 109th COVID-19-related death Wednesday morning, a press release stated. The patient, a 76-year-old female, died Tuesday night. The patient was a resident of Ector County and was admitted to Medical Center Hospital on October 21st. The patient had pre-existing conditions. The family has been notified. Supporting the Blue. Diamondback Energy and the Odessa Chuckwagon Gang recently honored the Odessa Police Department at the First Responder Appreciation Luncheon at Rolling Sevens Ranch. Courtesy photos.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.